Welcome everyone. This is another Remring podcast. This is Eric, and what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be celebrating the best REM album that's come out in decades. Murmur. Actually, this is the Murmur Deluxe Edition podcast review extravaganza party, whatever. Not only that, is we'll have some tracks that did not end up on the Murmur Deluxe Edition. For those that are out of the loop, of course, and are not reading this website, REM came out with another version of Murmur. The album is the same. They remastered it, and they also came out with a second CD from Larry's Hideaway in Toronto, Canada, that they played on July 9th of 1983, and it's a wonderful show. Some of my complaints were that they didn't include the entire show. There's about four tracks missing, so one of the things we'll do is actually play those tracks. And I've actually I got a little surprise for you. If for those of you that have the Larry's Hideaway show, what we have here is four tracks that have essentially been remastered as well. My good friend Drew Crumbaugh actually was able to go and clean up some of the tracks. I've listened to him several times, but of course my ears are only one pair of ears and he's listened to him, so there's going to be a lot of the nicks and scrapes and cuts and bruises and cuts that were present. Initially, that's what I believed to be the problem. However, the way he's cleaned them up, they sound a little, much better. So we're actually going to begin with one of those tracks. It's Wolves Lower.
Made famous by Orta Lindsey. We're REM.
Thank you. self-spissing myself. Wild and low, here's a house to burn. Wolves at the door, in a corner gone. Wild and low,
Well, there we go. That's the first track, Wolves Lower. For those who are actually listening, I do hope I hear comments, you know, does it sound all right? Does it sound, I mean, I understand this is a podcast and it's an MP3, but if you notice anything, please let me know. Or even, you know, start a discussion on the site. Because, you know, I think it would be nice to take some of these songs that did not get released and just, you know, pando them or something like that in a proper perspective, so that they get, you know, they get their due. Because it would be nice if, you know, someone wants to have the complete show, they can have a complete show without the cuts and such. My feelings about the Murmur release are that it's an amazing release. I even with some of the issues, I still think that it, you know, some people look at the cynicism and marketing and repackaging albums, but this is a perfect compilation. If you are someone who's into REM or just a fan and saying, well, where did they start out? This is a great album to give a friend, to give a loved one. Actually, funny that you should mention it. When I started dating my girlfriend, she asked me what I did, and, you know, of course, I had to come clean for the fact that I run an REM website. And, you know, one of the things she asked is, well, you know, what exactly do you like about REM? And I said, well, it's the live, you know, I appreciate the live music, especially the early stuff. And she wanted a sample. So what I did was, you know, it came down to really two shows. It was Larry's Hideaway and the Paradise Theater show that appeared about, I think that they played in Boston a couple days later. And she ended up just loving it. And listen, it was funny because I'd go in her car and be driving around, I'm like, is she just playing this because she's trying to be with me, or is she just trying to make me feel good by playing REM? And that wasn't the case whatsoever. Next thing I know, she's calling, you know, Pilgrimage is an amazing song, and just loves Wolves Lower and a lot of songs. I think she could probably describe it better than I could. But it brought me back to this point of saying, you know, this is REM circa 1983, and by putting an album together, remastered, probably not as good as the Mobile Fidelity version, but much better than the standard CD, and then putting a live show saying this is REM, the full thing, not just two or three songs, or I should say pretty full show. It gives fans a real good perspective of where this band was in 1983. Some might argue, say that they should put out all kinds of rare B-sides or unreleased recordings or demos from Murmur. You know, my own opinion is one, I don't think there is that much. Not to say that there aren't that many recordings, but if you're going to put a demo or you're going to put something out there, you need to put something that's completely unique from the initial recording. And in the case of Murmur, most of these songs had already been play tested on the road, and some of the more unique versions of these songs you'll hear on the road. For example, they have a Strand Cabaret show where they play a slow version. There's a slow intro to Sitting Still, where they pretty much do the first about a minute, just in a very slow sort of the Gardening at Night demo, slower version. They just do that for about the first minute, and then they speed it up to normal speed. There's the Catapult Stephen Hague demo, which would have been a nice release to come out here, but again, that's just one song. In hearing that, that would I think a lot of fans would get a kick out of that. But from the Murmur demos that I've heard, and while I think they're amazing for my ears, I think for the common fan out there, it's going to be like, well, it's pretty much the same outside of a chord change or an additional guitar playing or maybe a verse change here or there. Most of it's pretty much the same. And as I said, I don't want to say that it's they're bad, and I do hope that one day they get a proper release, either in the among traders or by REM, but not for this release. This is not the place for that. Well, let's go into another track. This second track, actually, I don't know why it wasn't included, because I've never really noticed any flaws or issues with it. And it is actually one of my more favorite tracks off of Murmur to begin with, and that's Moral Kiosk. So here we go, Moral Kiosk.
Oh, Y'all know the song. This pretty. I was worried for a minute there. Making them up. Somebody had to.
Play something for Joe Santos.
For Joe who?
Santos.
Okay. This song is for Joe Santos.
Yeah, I think Murmur will go down as being REM's most influential work. The artists that were, I think, influenced by REM, not just bands at the time, you know, in the South, or even bands that were overseas, such as, you know, I still believe that there's, you know, some influence that, you know, bands like the Smiths and such probably had in listening to REM's work. I mean, let's remember during this period when they went overseas, Murmur and REM, I mean, nobody really knew what to expect, and then they play the live stages, and critics at the time who were very pompous to the idea that anything out of America was good, obviously realized that there was something in REM, and they didn't just carry, you know, Murmur wasn't just an album that catapulted the careers of REM. I mean, REM waved the flag for many American artists, such as Replacements, such as Black Flag, that they decided, you know what, there is a lot of good music, and we're going to, you know, show the world exactly, you know, in a very, probably the most quiet revolution there was, that, hey, there's a lot of good music that's coming out of America, and you know, here we go, because let's remember what was going on in 1983 in rock and roll was that you had bands like Flocking Seagulls, Flock of Seagulls, Duran Duran, Culture Club, and a lot of these synth, you know, oriented bands that weren't really doing, were sort of ignored the, you know, that whole post, you know, the punk ethos. And REM really came and really changed that. And there needed to be an album that did that. So basically, say what you want. I mean, if you like hi-fi, if you like Accelerate, if you like Document, whatever, this was the album that changed the way that you know, it changed the course of rock and roll. If you look at the reviews, if you look at the commentary that has been written about Murmur, and it's very difficult, I think, to even say, well, you know, write the definitive meaning behind that album. You're seeing a lot of critics just writing 10. I mean, to say that an REM album would get a 10 on Pitchfork is absolutely stunning in these days. But I think, you know, Murmur definitely deserves that status. I think actually, I want to say a couple of years ago they put Murmur in the top. I think it was the top five albums that were released in the 1980s. I'd put it number one, but you know, everyone has a, you know, some differing opinions about that. Here's a track that I think that just it never really works on bootlegs, because I think it it's a little quiet, I don't think it in I think in the case of this particular release, they probably didn't want to give money to whomever is the owner of this song, and that would be Moon River. And this was also not included on the Larry's Hideaway release. So here we go, Michael Stipe doing Moon River.
River, star someday.
Sing along.
Could you make it? You are broken wherever you're going. You're going my way to drift out off to see the world. There's such a lot of world to see. You're after the same amazing. Riding around the bend, my huckleberry friend.
It's always funny going back to the old, you know, I'm sorry, listening to Murmur and then listening to REM talk about Murmur, because I think that in many respects, while they're obviously pleased by it, is sometimes when you write good music, it follows you. And, you know, yes, REM, Michael Stipe's a better singer now. He's a better lyric writer. But to say that his contribution on Murmur was more important to rock music than his contribution to Accelerate, or say that the uniqueness of which he provided his vocals on Murmur is a gross disservice to rock and roll. I mean, let's just... You know, yeah, you're older, you're more accomplished in what you're doing, but that doesn't mean that in the perspective of art that it's going to be better. I think that art is unique, where it's, you know, having experience doesn't really, you know, it doesn't work. It's sort of like politics. You know, if you're in the Senate for 30 years or 40 years, sometimes that experience only gets you so far. I mean, people want change. And in the case of Murmur, that was change. Now we have a different REM. We have an REM that has evolved to a three-piece. They have had arguably slight success in the albums they've released since Bill Berry has left, depending on who you talk to. And in doing so, it's like, well, you know, when does... you can't look at Accelerate and say, well, you know, this album, Accelerate, is going to have that same lasting impression like an album like Murmur would. And you cannot lie and say that, oh, well, you should listen to Accelerate because I'm a better lead singer and Peter's a better guitarist and Mike's a better bassist, and because we're more accomplished, our music is better. No, that argument never worked. It doesn't work now. It hasn't worked with any other band. You know, I don't have any Paul McCartney albums, but the Beatles stuff is legendary. It's masterpiece. And Paul McCartney was not a better musician back during the Beatles. I mean, the wealth of knowledge that he's picked up since 1970 to now would say that he should be making better music, but it doesn't work that way. We're not, you know, technicality or technical, you know, prowess only gets you so far. I think it comes down to the time and the place. Johnny Rotten was right when you know, he believed that the Sex Pistols were really sort of they made quality music, but they came out during a period of time in the 70s, especially in the UK, where there needed to be that group. So timing is important as well. And they sort of knew that, you know, their short-lived climb and decline was almost maybe quote-unquote necessary, but they knew that it, you know, something needed to be uprooted in society. Murmur was a sort of an uprooting of music. It was four people coming together and saying, you know, this is what's good and wrong, or right and wrong about rock and roll, and this is what we have to do. And that's what they did it, and they accomplished it 100%. It was almost as if, you know, Martin Luther was pinning his 95 thesis on a doorway. That's what Murmur became. It became a document, a template for rock and roll for the next 15, 20 years. People still use that initial template today. I mean, you could see it in bands like Pearl Jam, who listened to this band, and especially Eddie Vedder, you know, not just trying to understand the lyrics and such like this, but listening, if you listen to those early interviews and listen to or read the articles about REM, and you say, you know what, this makes sense. This is not about the business. This is about something larger. That to me is like, it was the most quiet revolution that went on. We see from 1982-83 through Nirvana, this apex in rock and roll, where all of a sudden, through all this growth of music that we see, bands like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Smashing Pumpkins, where alternative became the mainstream for a short period of time. I see that. I don't necessarily believe it's showing in the sales. I do believe that a lot of bands today in rock and roll live by that same the same beliefs. We've gotten away from stadium shows. We've gotten away from the idea that you know, music is all about corporate greed, and you maybe it's something better than it was before. Unfortunately, I think it's hard to gauge, though, in a sort of a scientific perspective. But it's just something to think about. But while we're thinking, let's play another song. This is Pretty Persuasion. This also had some cuts in it, and I believe that Drew really cleaned this one up as well. So let's play that for you. Pretty Persuasion from Larry's Hideaway.
So wrong.
Okay, so let's talk about, well, I should tell you my story. I never told anyone the story about how I got this album. Actually, I got a wonderful birthday present this year, a surprise trip to Buffalo to visit Drew. So, as I said, Drew and I met, we were in Boy Scouts together, we went to the same church, and we had lost touch, and then we actually found each other again on a REM email group, and we've been friends ever since. So this is like 10 years, and so I visited him in Buffalo, and we ended up going to this place in Rochester on the day I left, House of Guitars, and so I'm looking around. House of Guitars is like one of these really insane record stores where they just have boxes everywhere and nothing's really in any order, and you sort of have to, you know, in some boxes they said don't touch it, you know, please ask to see. It was funny to see like eponymous and long boxes. Anyone looking for out of date or say it's like import B single or singles from, you know, from out of time, etc., you can just go there and they have a whole whole selection of there. You just have to sort of look around, you know, plan to spend at least an hour, okay, block out an hour, maybe more, depending on what else you're looking for. But it was a really cool place. I'm just sort of walking around and looking at things, and next thing you see is a cardboard box and it had CDs in it, and I just see Murmur Deluxe, and it had on a label 1125. So I'm like, looks like they're releasing it early. And I ended up buying it. You know, I wasn't sure if they would, you know, there was no price tag. I ended up buying it, and we listened to it on the way back to his place. And, since then, he's, of course, gone and remastered these tracks, because I also brought Rising because I wanted him to compare or at least have a copy of that, and he's provided some excellent work here, so I do very much appreciate it. That being said, you're questioning to yourself, what, you know, should I get Murmur or not? Should I get the deluxe edition? You know, my opinion is you're just going to have to play it by ear. I love it. But if you've got the Mobile Fidelity Edition, you're probably going to say, I don't know if I want it. I do think that for the most part that the live CD was really good. However, after saying that, and after getting a copy of Drew's remastered version of Rising, I'm not so sure that Drew should be doing remastered albums for the band versus whomever they have. I mean, at least these live discs, I just think that he has a better touch than what's going on. Plus, it just at least cleaning these things up. I really think it works. And why put yourself to the criticism whenever anyone's going to bring up loudness wars? Why even bring that criticism up? As I said, I think this one's better than Accelerate. You know, I know that the audiophiles out there sometimes will complain about, well, this is occurring or that's occurring. You know, I just think that he did it, you know, and as he said, in 30 minutes he was able to clean these four tracks up, two tracks up. The other two I don't think had any issues. But why just not put the whole album together the whole live show for everyone versus just, you know, missing these four, well, I would say pretty wonderful tracks. I think that Wolves Lower and Moral Kiosk are paramount to the set. But if you're not going to buy it for yourself, if you've got a cousin, if you've got a brother or sister, you got someone in your family, you know, this is one of those great, like, okay, great holiday gifts. Show people, again, this is, you know, this is an album to get. So I would suggest to definitely buy it. But if you can find it, I would definitely buy it, but better yet, you know, pass it on to a relative and see what they think about it. I would, I don't know. I just, this is an album that people need to listen to. And if they're rock fans and they haven't heard Murmur yet, you know, this is the time to get them into it. The liner notes are wonderful. There is actually an Easter egg involved there as well. A little Easter egg. Check out the liner notes for that. Not really that big of a deal. Sort of funny and scary. It is not a song. Okay, so don't get. I'll say that. But it's a cute little thing. So, but you have to, I should say, you in order to hear the Easter egg, you have to make sure that you're listening to the CD on a proper CD player and not a computer, because it's not going to show up. And also what you'll have to do is, what I would suggest is, when you hit rewind, don't rewind to the previous track. You just have to hold the button down and let it scan, and that way you'll get to it. You'll notice, okay, something's going on here. That is if you're having any problems listening to it. We're going to play some other music, and I'm trying to figure out what exactly I want to put up. I'm thinking, and I'm searching through my music here, of putting, maybe something from... Okay, I think what we're going to do is, I think, Shaking Through from the Listen Harder show. It should be fun to listen to.
Why?
You know, one of the problems that demos, at least in the early days, had at least, was that REM was performing a lot of their songs live. They were playtesting these songs on the road. So unlike the albums in the 90s where they might have played, done some like unique demo recordings or really constructing the songs in the studio, they would construct them on the road. And here's a good example actually from 1983 of another song that was exactly that. Now, by the time this song gets to the demos for Reckoning, it's like, well, it's already created. And I know a lot of fans out there go, well, we need to have demo recordings from these albums. But to me, it's like, well, there are better recordings out there to get the true, you know, early, or I should say, there are better songs or better in better shows to get true early recordings of these songs. In this case, this is the first known recording of Time After Time. Song and I'll just sign off right now. Let's see, this is probably better than any demo that you're going to get for this song, and that particular song is Perfect Circle, and it was taken from Strand Cabaret in July of 1982, in fact. So enjoy this little nugget for your listening pleasure. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. This is Herrick signing out.
Rockville has been sold to the producers. It will be on their next album. Please don't ask for it. No, the young ones. Okay, we sold it to Melancholy.